and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
That is just a fact of life.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history, Pedro Fernandez.
Woo! It's going to be good.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen, live emanating from the Sports Byline Studios in San Francisco. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Often imitated but hardly duplicated, 37, make that 38 plus years now of knocking out all bums. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Yes, the man was correct in that lofty introduction. I am your host. I'm your modest host. I'm also, of course, a four-time Golden Glove champion, award-winning writer. Yes, I talk a bit of smack, but the bottom line is we do that in order to entice you to get involved. Bottom line is you can do so on the toll-free if you'd like. 1-800-878-7529 is 1-800-878-7510. Of course, there's also the guilt-free, no-commitment text line. You can text me here in the studio. The number, 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. Real quick, we'll go through the weekend and results. Of course, Virgil Ortiz, a winner over Maurice Hooker, now 17-0, 17 knockouts, TKO in the seventh round. Bottom line is Hooker came to fight, but when you come with a knife to a gunfight, you're going to get beat. He got beat. A lady we'll hear from a little bit later in today's show, Sentencia Super Bad Estrada, now 20-0, 8 KOs, of course, a winner in 10 rounds over Annabelle Ortiz. Ortiz came in with a impressive record at 31-3, but only 4 knockouts. You can't punch. Bottom line is the scores were going across, going away 189 twice and 99-90, meaning a shutout, no doubt about that. She's a southpaw. She was orthodox. She's like Hector Camacho, but she's only female. She's a female version of the Harlem Hacker. So the bottom line is we'll hear from her a little bit later in the show. And, of course, we'll spend some time with Sir Kenneth. I'm talking about boxing's UK night. I'm talking about Kenny Rainford. We'll spend some time with him. And then Ali and Frazier at the, probably about 40 minutes past the hour. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC TV. If you're watching WBC TV, if you're watching us live on Sports Byline USA's channel, of course, live on Twitch.tv, this is our broadcast. We come to you every Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific, live for 2 hours, live on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. For me. Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
Just win, baby.
Just win, baby. My buddy Al Davis. Man, Al was a bit of a, how can I put this? When Al was in the room, you knew Al Davis was there. Of course, the owner of the Oakland Raiders. I mean, he probably, he moved the team to L.A., sort of became like everybody hated him up here. Everybody hated him in Northern California. Once he took the team to L.A., then he brought it back to Oakland. Then, he, of course, him and his son sold it to, or brought it to Las Vegas. Bottom line is, people in Oakland not happy with the Davis family. But he was an icon. There's no doubt about that. And when he showed up at Ricky's Sports Theater, we had this little special section where us members of the clan, I call it Ricky's clan, we like the family, because all of us were put together in this one room, little VIP room. And of course, that was with Al Davis and Jack Tatum and guys like that. Bad, bad dudes from the Oakland Raiders. Speaking of bad dudes, let's talk about bad women. Pound for pound, women's boxing is starting to come back, I think. Of course, I was down on it for a while, and if you have Clarissa Shields being the flag bearer, maybe it's not the greatest thing in the world because she talks a lot more than she fights. But the bottom line is we'll get to her in a minute. Let's go through the top 15 as far as pound-for-pound women are concerned. Of course, let's go. We'll go with BoxRec.com on this one. Katie Taylor, 17 and zip. She comes to us from Ireland. Jessica McCaskill, we heard on last week's show, of course, a winner not once but twice over Cecilia Brakus. Brakus came in at 36 and zip about in August 2020. She got beat then, close decision. She got the brakes beat off her the other night. Brakus got the brakes beat off her, I kid you not, by Jessica McCaskill, who won going away with a shutout decision, no doubt about that. McCaskill now 10-2. She's got 3 knockouts. She's ranked number 2 as far as the pound-for-pound women are concerned. Number 3, Daphne Pearson. She comes to us from Belgium. Her record is 44-3. Impressive 44-3 record. Clarissa Shields, of course, the aforementioned chick from Clint Flint, Michigan, where the water's not too good. 11 and zip. Of course, the Flint's got a good boxing history with the Bird family and things like that. Number 5 will be Cecilia Brakus. Of course, she loses her twice in her last 2 fights, 36-2. Number 6 is a lady we'll be hearing from in just a second. I'll talk about Sunisa Estrada. Yikes. What can I tell you? She's the minimum weight champion, the flyweight champion, the junior flyweight champion. I think she can win all those weight classes all the way up to probably about 118 or maybe 122 pounds. I kid you not. That's how good she looks. And the fact that you're able to combine. Listen, she's doing stuff to guys, I mean to girls, that she used to do to guys. She used to beat up guys in the gym. I kid you not. So the reputation is there. The pedigree is there. She can box, no doubt about that. Here's what she said last night post-fight.
Sunisa, congratulations.
Thank you.
I think you brought a tear to the eye of your former stablemate, Sergio Mora, in winning that title. Took you 7 seconds to win your last fight.
Yeah.
You go the full 20 in this one, and you walk out with a new title. What did you think of your performance?
I mean, I thought I implemented the game plan exactly where we were supposed to. You know, dropped her. How many times is it?
Officially, once in the second round?
Once, yeah. So there were certain punches that I was trying to set up, and that was one of them. But yeah, I mean, she's been the reigning champion for 7 years, defended her title 12 times, and I knew that this was my time. This was meant to be.
Talk to me about the right hand you landed in that second round that put Ortiz down. How did you set that up?
So Ortiz is used to being the shorter fighter, so she's used to being none of her opponents ever keep their distance and keep their front foot in front of them to get her to stay away. So our game plan was to just continue to throw the right hand, and little by little, as she got closer and closer, she thinks I'm going to throw the hook, and that's when I threw the right hand.
Did it surprise you how durable Ortiz was, able to stand up to your assault round after round?
I mean, I knew she was durable. I mean, she hasn't been stopped in a long time, and she comes to fight. She comes in great condition, and I knew she would be very durable the whole fight.
You've talked about having, as Sergio comes over, stablemates for many years in Dean Campos' gym. You've talked about how you're more comfortable now at 105 pounds as opposed to having to fight at 112 and above over a number of years. What's the difference in you?
The difference is that, you know, I'm able to show my strength and my power at this weight class. I'm used to fighting, before fighting, Golden Boy, I was fighting at 112 pounds, and girls were even heavier than that. And, you know, that's not my natural weight class. So fighting at 105 and 108 is where I should be. Mm-hmm.
So now you have a title at 105 pounds. You have some options. What do you want to do next?
I want to unify 105, unify 108, and also fight at 112 and get world titles there as well.
Does Marlon Esparza, a rematch there, fit into your plans?
I mean, right now she's irrelevant. She doesn't have a world title, and she fought her last fight at 118 pounds, so obviously she's not planning on losing weight to fight me. So, but I would like to fight Yesenia Gomez, Jessica Bopp, or any 105, 108-pound champion next.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Irrelevant. When a fighter says irrelevant in a post-fight press conference, I think she's got it going on. She said irrelevant. Talk about the Esparza girl, of course, that she beat prior. That's supposed to be the big name for her. But the bottom line is this girl, I think, can carve her own way. She talks a good game. She walks a good game. She's fighting at 105 pounds now, and I think she can move up to 108 or 112 pounds, 115 pounds. I think she talked about being at a disadvantage or a slight disadvantage against the bigger weight fighters. But she's a big girl. She's a big, tall girl. And the ability to fight both right hand and left hand, she sort of switched back and forth. Bud Crawford, I don't know why he was named Bud. I take that back, we do, but it wasn't because he was a buddy. Anyway, Bud Crawford, Terrence Crawford, the WBO 147-pound champion, he was ringside last night. Of course, that's what he does. He switches back and forth. As far as Crawford and Virgil Ortiz is occurring, you heard what Ortiz had to say an hour or one. He liked that fight next. Is he ready for that? Not the way his face looked. I mean, he looked like he had been put through a meat grinder, and Maurice Hooker is not the biggest puncher in the entire world. So if you're going to go that route, I think that as far as Ortiz is concerned, maybe he should go back to or stay with the drawing board. I mean, it's not a matter of going back to the drawing board. It's staying with it. I mean, he's only 17-0 with 17 whacks, but all the fights have come in seven or less rounds. So I wish him the very best as far as his future is concerned. I think he's a star at welterweight. The fact that he was throwing those body shots last night, and you could hear those body shots just ricocheting all over you, like bang, off your speakers, your headphones, the whole nine yards, because of the fact there's not much of a crowd anymore. I think that the TV producers ought to take that into note. In other words, you want better ring mics. Better ring mics. So now you hear these body shots. I mean, Ortiz was landing those body shots last night. I wanted to turn down the volume. Yikes, because you don't ever want to take those kind of shots. And Hooker took them, kept standing. Of course, his fight was stopped in the seventh round, but he took a licking and kept on ticking. No doubt about that. Straight up, we're going to take things to the UK. Of course, bringing in Sir Kenneth. I'm talking Kenny Rainford. Of course, he's our boxing UK guy. Talk about boxing in the UK, of course. And he's got some memories of Marvin Hagler. And of course, I'll talk to an extent about Marvin Hagler. The fact that I think that You know, I look at his career today, and I was sort of rough on him, the fact that he made his bones against guys who were smaller than him, Roberto Duran, who almost beat him after 12 rounds in the 15-round fight, only lost by a couple of points. Of course, Ray Leonard did beat him. Thomas Hearns had his greatest moment against him, things like that. So when you look at all that, you know, I sort of like dog Marvin. But the bottom line is he had to fight 50 times before he even got a title fight, and then they ripped him off at that. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC TV, live on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Let's take it across the pond. Of course, we're bringing Sir Kenneth Rainford. Kenny, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good, man. Before we get to the Marvin Hagler stuff, anything new in the UK as far as boxing news concerned this week?
Well, there is. There's a bit of a rumor flying around that Eddie Hearn from Matchroom Promotions is going to be possibly leaving Sky Sports to join The Zone in August.
Okay, now, Eddie, why is that significant? Can you explain that to the listeners?
Yeah, well, Sky TV is the biggest thing in Britain at the moment with as regards sports. But it would appear The Zone want to take all Eddie's fighters and shows and put them on a regular basis on their network to gate crash onto the UK scene.
So the Zone is not available in the UK right now?
It is, but obviously all the big fights in the UK are on Sky, so therefore they're watching the big fights on Sky rather than the Zone.
Is that going to piss a lot of people off?
Piss Sky off, I know that.
I'm at the UK boxing fan because, you know, when some guy told me yesterday, Matt Grizzle, he's still upset over the fact that HBO dropped boxing. I told him that was like 7 years ago. Get over it.
Yeah. The other one is, you know, I'm a bit confused as how Sky are going to sell this pay-per-view event with Chisora and Parker in May. I mean, these are two shot-worn fighters. I couldn't see many people wanting to, you know, to pay for that fight. You know, he's brought on Chris Eubank Jr. to fight Marcus Morrison on the undercard. And, of course, there'll be a tremendous female fight with Katie Taylor against the Liverpool native Rebecca Jonas, you know.
Katie Taylor, tell the listeners about Katie Taylor, pound for pound considered the best woman fighter in the world, according to BoxRec.
Yeah, well, she reminds me a lot of the coal miner's daughter.
Christy Martin.
Christy Martin, yeah, the coal miner's daughter, Christy Martin, who ironically, Christy Martin had one of the greatest fights I ever saw on a Mike Tyson undercard against Deidre Gogarty, who was she was in my camp at the time. She was part of the team I was involved with Bo Williford, you know. So, Katie Taylor's a throwback. She's a real good fighter, you know.
Okay, and let's talk about the other, you know, there's a good fight as far as women were concerned last night. I don't know if you got to see that. That was on The Zone. Jessica McCaskill was a winner last week over Cecilia Brekka. So women's boxing, with the exception of Clarissa Shields, I'm not a big Clarissa Shields fan, but women's boxing seems to be becoming a little bit more appealing.
Yeah, definitely. And let's face it, they're very rarely an adult fight.
Because they got a point to prove. I mean, that's what some girl told me one time in the gym. Like, she was sparring with guys. So this girl was sparring with guys. I said, why do you feel, you know, you go out there, you have to look so. She goes, you understand. She goes, I'm fighting for all the women. I said, well, what do you mean? Yeah. She goes, they're all watching me. I said, oh, okay, in the gym too. But anyway, the bottom line is she was supreme. I don't know if you got to saw that girl last night, Ciense Estrada. Yikes. Did you happen to see her, that 105 pounder?
I haven't seen it from last night. No, I haven't seen it yet. I'll be watching that tonight.
Okay, so do you guys watch the fights when they're on The Zone? You watch them a day later? You watch them on YouTube or something like that? Is that what happens? What?
Well, what I do is I watch. I have them stored on my TV because they're on so late. It's, you know, early hours of the morning here. When I used to be working before this pandemic came on, I used to come home from work and watch them. Then now what I do is record and watch them the next day.
Okay. Marvin Hagler passed away a week ago. Of course, Marvin Hagler had 50 fights before he was even given a title shot. And in the first title shot, they robbed him. I mean, that was a blatant robbery against Vito Adafermo. And Adafermo maybe won a few rounds, and they called that one a draw. And, of course, he would come back and obliterate the man that beat Adafermo and Alan Minter. When Marvin returned to the U.K., how was he treated after that night thing in 1981?
You know, when he beat Alan Minter in Wembley there, it was just mindless idiots who jumped on the racial bandwagon, and they were a small number, but they caused a big mess. When Marvin came back to England, he was treated like a warrior that he was. Everyone loved Marvin. I was fortunate to put three after dinner shows on with Marvin, two in Liverpool, one in London, all three sold out. And Marvin was an absolute dream to work with. And you know what the thing about it was? He wasn't an attention seeker. He wasn't a massive person who had this braggadocio of having loads of fans around him and stuff like that. He was a man's man. When he came to fight, he gave 150%. And he was just a warrior. A proper throwback.
You know, I'm laughing because, we'll go back to 1985. I mean, he was prepping for the Hearns fight. We're in Johnny Taco's office, the Johnny Taco's ringside gym on Main and Charleston in Las Vegas. And, I'm sitting in the office and Johnny says to me, Hagler's coming in. I'm shutting down the gym. I said, well, I gotta leave you. No, you stick around. So, all right. So I got to stick around and Hagler comes in the office. Goody and Pat Petronelli come in with him and they got the chairs facing each other and they wrap Hagler's hands. And it was myself, Johnny Taco, Marvin Hagler, Pat and Goody Petronelli, and nobody's left except me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that was a little sad. And you know, you're right. He could walk through a room very unassuming if he wanted to. He didn't have to pound on his chest and this and that. But I'll also say this. I told Larry that I spent like countless minutes with Larry Merchant last week talking about me being scared of Marvin Hagler. I talk smack around everybody. I wasn't afraid to talk smack around anybody, but with him, I parsed my words. In other words, when he and I were arguing the the Hagler-Leonard decision of 1987, April 1997, with Leonard winning a split decision. He and I argued that down there in Mexico City, and I knew not to argue too vehemently. In other words, I would try to put it like this. I go, well, Marvin said it was sort of like a game of math. You know, you gave away the first four rounds, and then Ray Leonard stole three rounds down the stretch. And that's the way I explained the 7-5 score of me having it for Ray Leonard to Marvin Hagler. And he was acceptable. He accepted that. I mean, he didn't beat bitch at me or come back to it, but he was the only guy I would think of in the history of boxing to where I parsed my words around him. I really did.
Yeah. Well, I spoke to him as well about the Leonard fight. I mean, I personally thought Leonard won the fight and I thought he won it handily. But you know, that's the only blip on his, the only real blip on his record, because he avenged the other losses.
Yeah, but let's be honest, you know, he was ancient at that point in time. And I want to say ancient because they made him have 50 fights before he fought for the title. I mean, Ryan Garcia's got 23 fights. He's going to fight for the title. You got guys, the kid from, Leo, whatever his name is, the bantamweight kid from the UK, he's got 10 fights. We're talking about him fighting for a title. This guy went 50 fights before anybody would fight him.
Yeah. And you know, it's just remarkable. And when he went to camp,
Yikes.
It was locked down. He'd done everything right yet. Right. You got to remember, this guy, his whole entire career was 160.
Yeah. I know.
Entire career.
But is that a knock on him that he didn't step up to 160? There wasn't a 168 at that point in time, but 175. People don't realize 175 pounds is that 15 pounds is a huge difference from 160 to 175. In fact, I think the 168 pound division is well merited and it should have been in force a long time ago. You know, 15 pounds, bro. 15 pounds of boxing is like 30 years. As far as time, it's just like you can't measure it.
Oh no, you can't. And the other thing as well, Marvin's not a big guy. He's only a small guy.
Yeah.
He's not a big guy. 160, 168 maximum. I would have said Hagler would have been effective at. At 175, he would have been too small. It would have been like a Dwight Muhammad Kawi, the size difference that he was giving away to his opponents, to like the Michael Spinks and stuff like that. So I think Hagler had his head screwed on, and he knew his weight division. He knew his weight. And as far as I'm aware, he never had to struggle to make the weight. He always had this set routine, diet, etc., and training regime where he made the weight comfortably. He was never one to dry out massively or anything like that, you know?
You know, I was at Taco's gym, and he was doing some finish-up sparring. In other words, just to get loose and this kind of stuff. And the sparring partner, I can't remember who it was, the sparring partner was part of Johnny Taco's gym there. You know, there wasn't one of Hagler's sparring partners, because Hagler wasn't going to spar. But he decided he wanted to spar so he was going to get 4 rounds in to work with this guy, this journeyman guy. And the guy tried to step on Marvin's foot. You know what I'm trying to say? Try to make Marvin look bad. And Marvin hit him with a body shot. And I have to think it caved his ribs in. I mean, the guy went down, and the guy was laying there for like 5 or 6 minutes. And I said to myself, I wanted to lean over in his ear and go, "You brought that spit on yourself." You know what I mean? Because, you know, you respect when you're in there with a guy that's so much better than you, you just better respect him. But some of these guys, they step across the line and they have to pay for it. Right, Sir Kenny?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Okay. Definitely. 1,000,000%.
Okay.
You know, and he used to love the gyms that were, these modern gyms wouldn't have suited Marvin. I remember him telling me, we were talking about Johnny Taco's gym, funny enough.
Mm-hmm.
And he's telling me about a sign. I don't know if you remember it. That used to be in there. And it said, feel free to spit on the floor. It keeps the dust down.
Oh, you know, I had so many memories there. And when I wasn't there at this time, but Bruce Curry, the former WBC 140-pound champion, he went after Jesse Reed with a gun. And Johnny Taco had this big armored door at the back of the gym in the alley because of the fact guys used to break in there. So he put this armored door up, not for a protection from guns, but he put it up for protection from burglars, but it saved Jesse Reed's ass.
Oh yeah,
he was.
Yeah.
I mean, Bruce Curry was firing
with Bruce Chandler as well.
Yeah, exactly. Bruce Curry was a bit of work. Now it looks like the Tyson Fury Anthony Joshua fight is signed. You still going with Tyson Fury all the way in that one, or what?
I'm going with Tyson Fury. The fight is signed, but it's not signed because they've yet to work out the deal on the venue, when, and money. All those three are not confirmed yet. They've agreed to fight, but there's been no agreement on money. There's been no agreement on the venue and when. I mean, it's almost certainly going to take place in Qatar or the Emirates or somewhere in the Middle East. But the problem is, in June, it's going to be absolutely baking hot.
I don't want to laugh, but I've been to Dubai. I was in Dubai in the wintertime. It was like 105 degrees.
Exactly. You know, they're talking about they've got arenas with air conditioning under the seats and all this carry on. But you know, the fight will happen. But okay. You know,
real quick, before we go, Lee McGregor. That's the guy I was talking about earlier. Is he a future UK star? Is he the man or what?
Possibly. Wait and see. It's early days yet.
Okay, but for 10 fights, he's very impressive, don't you think?
Oh yeah, definitely. Very, very impressive.
Okay.
Very impressive. To be honest with you, I was impressed with last night with Anthony Fowler. He's a kid who I know, I've been around.
Mm-hmm.
Although he fought no one really great last night in Jorge Fortier, you know, they had a decent record. He was pretty durable. Okay. He got took out in 3 rounds.
Okay, I gotta press you this before the commercial break. Next week, Alexander Povetkin and Dillian White. Does Povetkin duplicate what he did the first time, or does Dillian White get revenge?
No, I think Dillian White gets knocked out again, but it yes. relates in the fight.
Yeah, I want to think that. Dillian White, why is he unpopular with me? I mean, he seems to be unpopular with anybody over here. But
you know, he's lazy in the gym. He's lazy.
Hey, Kenny, we'll leave it at that. All the best to you, Sir Kenneth. God bless you, man.
You too.
Kenny Rainford, my UK guest. I call him Sir Kenneth Rainford. Of course, he's boxing tonight from the UK. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, aka WBC TV. When we come back, we'll spend some time with Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali. Of course, 50 years, wow, March 8, 1971, passed a couple of weeks ago. We'll also talk about the fact that Rudy Clay fought on that card. That and more on WBC TV, live on Sports Byline USA, the Twitch.tv channel.
How did I get up from the knockdowns? I don't know.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council.
Joe's gonna come out smoking, and I ain't gonna be joking. I'll be pecking and a-poking, pouring water on his smoking. Then this might shock and amaze you, but I will destroy Joe Frazier.
50 years ago this month, of course, the greatest fight of all time, the fight of the century, March 8th, 1971, Madison Square Garden. It was sold out. It was sold out when it was, like, announced. Bottom line is, wow, Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier, both undefeated world heavyweight champions. Of course, Ali stripped of the title 3.5 years earlier, stripped of the title by everybody, I believe, but the WBC and Ring Magazine. Outside of that, he wasn't the champion anymore. Of course, then came along Joe Frazier, 1964 Olympic gold medalist. Man beat Jimmy Ellis. Of course, I mean, he beat everybody up to the point where he faced Muhammad Ali in this unification match at heavyweight. Of course, they were all on the line March 8th, 1971. But setting it up was the personalities between these two guys. One guy was all business. The other guy was all business, but he talked a lot of smack. Here they are, Ali and Frazier, loving life.
Mohammed, I hope I got a last-minute call. Joe could make it, and I hope everything should be all right now.
Because, well, you look like you just told me.
We don't want to stop any tapes or anything. We want to go straight ahead with this. You going to be all right?
Yeah, but you should have told me he was coming, at least.
Well, here is Joe Frazier. Yeah. How are you?
Fine, mate.
What do you call Muhammad? Did you?
No, I call him Clay.
You call him Clay?
Yeah.
And you don't ever call him champ or anything like that, don't you?
Well, how
do you
feel about him? He was a champ. I'm the champ now, you know.
Why were you so mad the other day? I saw you on television, news.
Well, it is a thing like this, Mike. I like go all over the country, and I don't believe in, you know, a lot of, you know, excitement anyway. Like, only time people know that I'm in town, you know, is like if I play on a show or maybe, let's say, a banquet, and here this guy come into my town, you know. First of all, he wants to run me out of the gym. Secondly, he wants to run me out of town.
What do you mean he wants to run you out of the gym? He calls up and says, I want to work out, or what?
No, he come in and tell me I got to leave town. I live here, you understand? I ain't going nowhere, you know. Next time, I think he's going to come up on Old Guns Avenue and try to put me out of the house. Mm-hmm. If I don't stop him now.
Yeah, you want to stop him?
I'm willing to stop him anytime, any place, anywhere.
You want to eat, but you want him to be in shape. You don't want to fight a man that's... he said he's a little out of shape.
No, well, I don't want no excuse. I mean, that's no excuse at all about he's out of shape. I mean, otherwise, he been training just as long as I was, and I might even fight.
Mike, you agitating.
No, but this... I also got a crazy pair of bookends on him. I might be a tall, thin MC at the end of the show. Now, wait a minute. Now, champ, you say that this man is only recognized as champ in certain states, and you're recognized throughout the world as the champ. And you have the belt.
Well, my problems have nothing to do with him. He's got to earn a living, you understand? I wouldn't tell him to stop fighting because I'm having problems with.
But do you tell him, call him up and tell him to leave town when you're here? Tell him to get out of the gym and all?
Well, I didn't actually put it that way, you know. I just said the town.
How did you put it?
The town's not big enough for two world heavyweight champs.
This show might not be big enough either, you know. Yeah. Could you beat this man?
Well, I'm 3 years out of training, about 25 pounds overweight, but...
What do you weigh right now?
About 230. Fight weight's about 210.
What do you
maybe
weigh?
20 pounds.
I'm about 215, and my fighting weight about 204. But I think if you have a chance to meet each other, let's say soon, I think I'll come down to about 199.
Mm-hmm.
So I can be fast.
Because
I know I'm going to need speed to catch it with him, you understand?
Now, wait a minute. By that, are you implying that he's going to be running around?
Oh, he's going to put his bicycles on, no doubt about that. I haven't seen him
7 days in that fight, you'll be a week-old ghost.
That's right.
He doesn't look too frightened. But you mean before the fight he's going to be? You ever?
The only time I'm afraid of that I get frightened and nervous that he's not going to show up on time. That's what I'm afraid of.
Is this fight a real possibility, Muhammad?
All I say is this. I don't think it's justice to the boxing game that he don't have a chance to really show the world that he's the real champion. Not elimination or a political title, but the real physical title. It's injustice to him that he can't tell his grandchildren or he can't look his fans in the eye and say that I won the title from the man who was actually the best, and he should have a chance at that.
You need a license to fight. Can you get it?
Well, I really don't know. It's up to the boxing authorities, you know.
Do you want to fight him?
Well, I would say this. If I did, it would only be like for the record of boxing. Like, I hold the title and I am the champion. And I really know I'm the champion. And he really, financially, he's the champion, you understand? So see, look at those diamonds. Can you get a camera on all those watches or anything?
Wait a minute. Hey, the rules are you won't go beyond the microphones, guys, okay?
They was.
But you're going to see a real ghost here any second. they were his they watches were his and watch, rings.
His watch and rings.
Would this settle the championship once and for all if you two?
Well, you have another. My sparring partner's called champion too, James Ellis. He's getting ready.
He's your sparring partner.
He was when I was boxing, and now he's fighting Henry Cooper in London, England.
That fight's been postponed, though.
Have it?
Yes.
I didn't know.
Cooper was injured. I heard.
I think he and Ellis would have to have a showdown, and then after they get their two halves and make one hold, then possibly.
No, but you did say you want to fight. Let's say both of us in the same night, 5 minute rest.
I said if I had to, I would.
Right?
I would if I had to.
Well, see, you ain't going to have time for no wrestling with me, you understand? Because every time you breathe, you're going to breathe right down on me because I'll be close to you every second.
Would you like to go a few rounds here, guys? Huh?
Well, you see, it's I don't mind.
I'm not joking, seriously.
I know you're not.
And I'm sure he's not joking, and I'm known for popping off and talking a lot, and I have no need to talk and boast to. If I ever had a license or something, then we would seriously consider fighting him. So it's all up to the boxing commissioners and the people.
Where would you like to fight?
Well, you ask these people, would they want to see us box?
Would you like to see? He's got to believe it. And that sound will echo all over this country.
The people. If the people were voting, it would be on. It's just a few people in.
If you had your choice of locations, where would you want to fight, Muhammad?
Well, I don't really know. I think
it really doesn't make any difference to me. I mean, I was getting ready to get it on down to the gym yesterday. That's big enough down there for me.
Yeah, but you don't want to do that. I mean, this is going to be, this should be the biggest gate in history if you two meet. And you don't want to do it in the gym or all that.
Where would I want to fight? Yeah. It doesn't make no difference to me, you know what I mean? In hell, be just as good, you know? If you permit it, they permit it. You know, right here, it's good enough. Doesn't make no difference.
Well, Muhammad isn't in shape, and he's how many pounds over? He doesn't have any trunks. Besides, fighters don't fight with their bare knuckles anyway anymore. Your hands have to be managed. Soupy's sitting here with.
These are dangerous weapons. These are registered.
Why are they dangerous, Soupy?
Well, because they have nails in them.
Well, I want to wish, ladies and gentlemen, I do want to wish the best of luck to two fine athletes, Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
The Mike Douglas Show, 1970, of course, they're hooking this up. Joe Frazier's 26-0, 23 KOs. Muhammad Ali, 31-0, 25 knockouts. The Ring Magazine World Heavyweight Champion, the Linear World Heavyweight Champion. Of course, Joe Frazier recognized by the New York State Athletic Commission. Of course, they were really the people that were the catalyst in taking the title away. I mean, it wasn't the sanctioning bodies. It was a move made by the New York City Athletic Commission. Of course, they were against Ali because Ali was anti-establishment. Of course, they could bring in Joe Frazier, who was like pro-establishment, you know, and Joe didn't rock the boat. Joe wasn't one of those guys that rocked the boat. Joe would go on the bus. He would, you know, he wouldn't ride in the back of the bus, but he would get on the bus and he would play the game with everybody. Ali wasn't a game player, no doubt about that. But they were undefeated. The world came to a stop, no doubt about that. Hey, 25 years ago, wow, this month, talk about guys flying into a rage. Remember when David Tua was hot? The Slowin' Samoan. I take it back. They called him the Throwin' Samoan. I nicknamed him the Throwin' Samoan, the Slowin' Samoan. Of course, after that fight with Ike Iwabuchi up there in Sacramento, California, maybe the greatest heavyweight fight of all time. If you haven't seen that fight, you should probably dig it up somewhere. I don't know if it's got the foreign HBO broadcast that I did or the one with Larry Merchant and Jim Lampley and those guys, but either broadcast you get, it was probably the greatest heavyweight fight of all time as far as punches were thrown and excitement back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. I kid you not. Ike Iwabuchi, of course, a guy that was basically undefeated. And then he went to, he was in Dallas, Texas. Was he in Dallas? In Vegas. He was in Dallas, and Don King said to him, I want you to come into Vegas for a fight. And he said, okay. So he came into Vegas for a fight. I think he was staying at the Mirage Hotel, and he called up an escort service, and he called this girl up on the phone, you know, for some romantic interlude or something like that. And obviously he had nefarious things on his mind, and she had nefarious things on her mind, but she just wanted some money for it. He wasn't going to pay her. So evidently he wasn't gonna pay her. He locked her in the bathroom. She called, there's a phone in the bathroom, right? So she calls security. The cops come. They break down the door. They take Ike Iwabuchi to jail. Of course, he doesn't get out for 7 or 8 years. When he gets out, he's a fat old guy looking like, you know, maybe a guy that works for the garbage disposal company or something like that. Not like a prize fighter. So anyway, his career was over. But David Tua went on to fight for the World Heavyweight Championship against Lennox Lewis, having been part of that crew that night. I got to tell you, it was exciting. I mean, David Tua, we thought he was going to come to fight. He didn't come to fight. Once he got neutralized by that long left jab, of course, of the 1988 Olympic gold medalist, Lennox Lewis, the World Heavyweight Champion, he started getting that jab in his face. He's shorter guy, and you know, when you're short and slow, and that's what David Tua was for that fight, short and slow, you're going to have problems against a tall guy. You're going to have problems against a tall guy regardless. But when you're short and slow, in other words, he put on this weight. That's why I say he went from the throwing Samoan to the slowing Samoan. And the reason why I do say that is that he gained 10 or 15 pounds. People say, oh, come on, man, 10 or 15 pounds. He's a heavyweight. He just put up. No. He put it on and it slowed him down. And when you slow a guy down just a fraction of an inch, just a fraction, bang, you slow him down when he's a smaller guy, that takes away any advantage he has because speed was all that Tua had. Speed and good boxing moves. Of course, against Ike Iwabuchi, it didn't work. Against Lennox Lewis, he lost all 12 rounds. I had him losing all 12 rounds. Of course, I walked with Lennox back to the dressing room, had the IBO belt. I think that's the one they gave me. Lennox Lewis, Emmanuel Stewart, his trainer, gave me a belt, said, come on back to the dressing room. I got to walk back to the dressing room with this title belt in my hand, and I snuck in, and I'm watching Lennox Lewis pace around the dressing room after the Tua fight. He was like a lion in a cage. I mean, just pacing around and around and around. Doing that hyperventilating this and about 15 minutes later, he came down and he was starting to talk to people and this and that. And he said, I didn't realize how easy it was going to be. Yeah, it was easy at night because Tua had put on that weight. When you put on that weight and you rely on speed to make your moves, guess what? You're a little bit slower. And Tua, of course, could not slow the distance. Slow guys, when they're short, they end up be like Tony Galenta, taking punches, two-ton Tony Galenta. But if you're fast and sharp, like he was against John Ruiz, I think it was in March of 25 years ago, I think when David Tua knocked out Johnny Ruiz in one round, I mean, if he was throwing punches like that, he was long and lean. Tua had a fight, man. Tua had a big fight and a big punch. But once he got fat, it was over. That's boxing's nightmare, ain't it? Getting fat. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC-TV. Don't forget, the World Boxing Council, the website, you can check them out, what they're doing 24-7 at WBCBoxing.com. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC-TV.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Just what do you think of him as a fighter, huh?
Well, his footwork's lousy. He can't counterpunch. His timing stinks. And he doesn't breathe properly.
But you like him as a person.
Well, he has a nice smile.
Were they talking about Deontay Wilder? It might have been. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC-TV. Of course, Dillian White and Alexander Povetkin about to hook it up next week. The odds look like... looking at four or five different odds here. This is about plus 250 for Povetkin and minus 330 for Dillian White. So I guess the odds makers think that Dillian White's going to avenge that loss. I'm hoping he doesn't. But the bottom line is Povetkin, outside of the losses to the aforementioned Vladimir Klitschko and Anthony Joshua, he's never lost. I mean, that's a pretty good record. What's he, 37-2? Speaking of next week, women are taking the forefront. NBC Sports Network is going to go down March 25th. NBC Sports Network, that's right, not NBC Sports, NBC Network, the NBC Sports Network, it's a new channel. Anyway, Amanda Serrano, 39-1, win draw, 29 KOs, of course, fighting Daniela Bermudez, of course, she's 29-3, 10 KOs. They're going for some world title. The fact is, women's boxing, although I dogged it for a long time, is coming back, and these women are putting forth decent fights. When you produce, I will give you your props. If you don't produce, I will not give you your props. The bottom line is, the women are produced, the producing of late. They're hot. They're happening. No doubt about that. And I'm hoping that this young lady, Cecina Estrada, gets rocking and rolling, because I believe she is super bad. 20-0, 8 KOs. She is the fighter of the week, if not the fighter of the month in my mind. No doubt about that. Of course, the winner last night over Annabelle Ortiz, an experienced fighter, but just no match for Superbad. Superbad is the fighter of the week. Check her out. I'm talking about Saracena, Superbad Estrada. Check her out on YouTube.com for her recent fights. You have been listening to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You've been watching WBC TV on Twitch.tv, the sports byline USA channel. Of course, we go live with audio and live with video, two different programs, the same product, coming to you from the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. Here in the city by the bay, San Francisco, California. My name is Pedro Fernandez. There's a million things you could be doing today, but the fact you're listening and watching Ring Talk Live Worldwide, well, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. This is a production of the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, executive producer, the one, the only, the Hall of Famer, Scott Cuddy. Till next time, peace, love, and a ton of respect. Don't forget, Ring Talk Live Worldwide, Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific time, only on Sports Byline.